You might have thought it would never happen, but Switchcast is endorsing a transport company. Whether you're moving a rare collectible, a high-end sports car, or your personal luxury vehicle, Shaughnessy Overland Express delivers with precision, privacy, and respect. This isn't just transport, it's white glove care from pickup to delivery. For over 14 years, they've earned the trust of collectors, enthusiasts, dealers, and owners by offering unmatched service and personalized attention. You'll work directly with their experienced in-house team, ensuring a smooth and private experience without middlemen or surprises. Every shipment is protected with up to $3 million in cargo insurance, offering peace of mind for even the most valuable and rare vehicles on the road. In addition to their enclosed fleet, they've also established a trusted auto transport brokerage service, giving you access to a nationwide network of vetted open and enclosed carriers. Whether you need transport on a route they don't currently operate or their carriers are at full capacity when your schedule demands, they'll still get it done without compromising the Shaughnessy standard of excellence. Same professionalism, same personal touch, expanded flexibility. We are proud at Switchcast to endorse Shaughnessy Overland Express as the official transporter of Switchcast. Visit SOEXinc.com and tell them Switchcast sent you.
Let's just go, you know?
Audio is working.
Yeah, let's just start it. See what, and if it doesn't work, then it doesn't work. And we do it over.
Who is this new Ethan this week?
I don't know. Low stress.
I know. I'm trying a new thing here.
He was about ready to office space us and the equipment.
Welcome back to Switchcast Season 6. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, here with my co-host, Tyler Sanders.
Hello.
And Ethan Huffnagel over here, the new and improved international executive producer.
Oh,
he's got a sense of humor tonight. He just doesn't care what's going on. It's fantastic. We are light and breezy.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Switchcast is a podcast where we know what we're talking about despite evidence to the contrary and a lot of opinions on the internet to the contrary.
Yeah.
Whew. So many opinions this week for multiple reasons. We'll get into that. But I do want to talk about where I've been right over the past few years. Like, I feel like some of my prophecies are coming true.
Okay.
Not with Carvana yet, but I did watch yet another video where somebody went into a deep dive about their business practices and they're
this thing
is a scam.
Yeah, like this doesn't work. What's going on?
Right.
This doesn't make sense. I'm telling you, I don't have any money left to put into Carvana stock because I bought the car. But, you know, if tell me like 2 years ago if I would have just dumped my life savings.
CarMax stock might be worth looking at. But, you know, this is not a stock advice show, not financial advice. It's low. They have a lot of debt, too, but it seems like they're a real company. And they got a new CEO, so maybe that'll turn things around, right? I don't know. But let's see.
We'll come back in a year and be sad, because it's just going to have popped off. We both could have had it.
It's 50, never really been crazy. It's at like 30-something now, and its high was like 50.
Okay.
Carvana's done wild extremes, but if anything, that is evidence to why it is a scam, because you can make incredible money with big swings. So if, for example, you wanted to manipulate the P&L and show crazy losses, so your stock tanks and then you buy it and then miraculously have a rebound and save your company, and then the stock goes crazy and then you post record profits and more record profits, so your stock goes even more crazy. But those record profits were buried in two related companies that were owned by your previously convicted for fraud father.
Ah, yes. Uh-huh.
But you're making billions of dollars while the stock goes up. You don't need to make actual money in any of these companies because whatever money you claim to be making on your P&L, you're like 10Xing with your stock.
Doug, this sounds very specific and very like you've looked at this before. I don't know.
Right, whereas CarMax is an actual picture. Their stock is an actual picture of what their company's doing. There's no wild swings. It's just like, oh, they're down 20% because their company's sucking right now. Oh, they're up 10% because their company's not sucking right now.
Yeah.
And it's like very small swings reacting to real performance.
It's not just vibes.
Yeah. Anyway, we started the warm-up lap without announcing the warm-up lap. But hey, warm-up lap, what is fueling this podcast?
Well, I've got some Weller 12 here tonight. Decided I wanted to keep it easy breezy with my whiskey as well, and this stuff is delicious.
Mm. Is that the green label? No,
this is
label.
The black label. The green label is a little watery. Not my favorite. The antique and the 12 and the foolproof are delicious.
Mm. I think I have some antique 107 upstairs somewhere. I'm drinking my Cosmopolitan. I call it that because it's doesn't have vodka in it. It is sparkling water, cranberry juice, organic cranberry juice. I don't know why I'm looking at the camera. We're doing an audio podcast. I'm practicing.
This is force of habit.
Pineapple juice. And lime juice. So
that sounds like a pretty tasty concoction. Mm-hmm. Mine is just corn that sat in a barrel for 12 years, but it smells like apples.
A local salvage dealer that I'm friends with, not because I'm a good customer, because I don't buy salvage cars. But anyway, a local salvage dealer picked up, they texted me today, they bought two Custom Signals is the brand, Akron Police speed trailers.
Oh.
They put up on a road so they read your speed off, and print it out in large.
And then flash the like blue lights.
Yes.
They're going a little too fast.
He says he's pretty sure that they still function. And he's like, any good ideas on what to do with them? I'm like, I feel like if you had a dozen, we could come up with some really great ideas.
Why would you need a dozen?
Because you just like park them all on like a cul-de-sac or something in a row.
Just bing, 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 bing. And set the speed really low.
12 miles an hour. Yeah, if anyone else has some good suggestions or wants them. Yeah, I don't have any brilliant pranks or anything great to do with that. I feel like that's a good thing for a Karen to own, and I'm not a Karen.
It's somebody to literally like put it in their tree lawn.
Yeah.
Like, you're going too fast. They set it to like 1 mile an hour below the speed limit and then just like stand outside with a rolled up newspaper.
Let's see. This might almost be its own topic, but we've talked about Montana LLCs before, and we made a video on why they're not a great idea. We did not talk about the legality of them because we're not attorneys, and even if we were attorneys, we're not attorneys in all 50 states. So anyone that makes a blanket statement about them being legal or not legal is wrong. Fundamentally, because you can't make a statement about state law like just, was it carte blanche would be the, I think, covering everything?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But a lot of people took issue with my opinion that they're not great ideas because the potential consequences outweigh the immediate gains. However, some YouTube guy who likes building big trucks and setting Ferraris on fire and stuff got arrested by Tennessee authorities this past week. And it is all over the interwebs because he's famous. And it was for sales tax evasion, not federal, state sales tax evasion for titling said Ferrari in a Montana LLC.
Oh, but I'm sure he does business in Montana, Doug. I'm sure he owns a business there. Otherwise, he wouldn't do this, right?
Well, that's what everybody says. Oh, well, you own a business there. It's legal. I'm like, that's, again, you're not an attorney. Stop saying these things. Yeah. I'm not either. So, but I'm not going to say this is legal or this is illegal. However, Tennessee has made it quite clear that in their eyes, it is illegal. And they deem it a felony tax evasion, hence why he got arrested. And he was complaining they didn't get any notices in the mail or bills or fines before this. They just showed up and arrested him.
I do love that train of thought. They didn't tell me I was going to get arrested. So how was I supposed to know I needed to like follow the law?
I made the mistake of engaging with some people in a discussion on Facebook about this.
Ooh, bad.
And I'm like, well, yeah, it's a felony. Why would they send you advance notice that they're going to arrest you because they don't want you to either move assets, you know, all of a sudden come into compliance, flee the country.
Yeah. Like or the state, I guess, in this case.
All of the different things you would do if you knew you were about to be arrested for this thing. And people went off on me for that. Oh, no, no, no. You don't know anything. One guy called me a retard.
Nice.
Because he said, I tried explaining this to you. I'm like, you didn't explain anything to me. You just said, no, he should have gotten a notice. And I actually did a very little cursory. I love using that word. I did a cursory search.
Ooh, there it is.
And I did not use AI answers because AI sucks. And most of the time they're wrong. I went to like states' websites. I went to legal, you know, law firm websites. And almost all of them said, yeah, no, you don't get advance notice for a warrant. You don't get told that there's a warrant out.
Yeah, that would seem insane to me that you would get a notice, like it pop up on your phone, like a notification, or you'd get something in the mail, like get out of here. They want to catch you. That's why they.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't get warning in advance. Well, I robbed a store and I didn't get like a letter saying they wanted their stuff back first. Like I have to make restitution first. I just got arrested. No kidding.
Golly.
Because they saw you on the security camera. Anyway, so
I am fascinated to hear and see what happens like in the end of this, because the YouTuber in question posted on their Instagram story a very like in intense stream of things, like they picked the wrong guy to like make an example of, and I'm going to fight this. And I'm really wondering what sort of ground they think they're standing on.
I think maybe they purposefully picked the quote unquote wrong guy. It's the right guy for them because they're sending a message to everybody that, hey, we don't mess around.
And I feel like this was inevitable. I don't know if there's any way that you can look at how blatantly this loophole or this scenario, this path is used to register very expensive cars. I don't understand how you'd think it would not eventually go away. It's Tennessee, not a secret.
Well, and it, again, depends on the state. Somebody posted that in Kansas, it is absolutely a felony, and they've proved it multiple times, and like it's very hard to get around it there. But I found an article from 2022. Knox County, Tennessee man pleads guilty. This is from Chattanoogan, to cheating Tennessee taxpayers out of money by failing to pay taxes on vehicle. So a 77-year-old James Russell Rice pled guilty to tax charges in Knox County criminal court. So this is not the first time that this has been a criminal issue. And so for all the people trying to say that this in Tennessee anyway, that this is a civil issue, they should have sent him notices, just like you can just pay the fine. Like Tennessee has prosecuted and convicted people before, at least James Russell Rice or maybe other ones, for this very scenario. So obviously Tennessee believes it's a criminal issue, and
I'm sure they've got all they need to continue to make it one.
Yeah.
This time.
So I feel like there's two outcomes for this. One, he's going to find a loophole. He's got good lawyers and, you know, he might win in the end, but Tennessee will get what they wanted, which is a ton of PR, and they'll scare people into registering or coming into compliance and paying a bunch of money. Or if it's going to be like a Martha Stewart type outcome, where I don't know if you watched a documentary about her
being
prosecuted for insider trading and her like 3 months in jail. And it, again, documentaries are biased. Documentaries should not be called documentaries. They should be called opinion pieces. Yeah. But from my perspective watching it, it was totally we're going to make an example out of you, and the consequence was way out of line for what actually happened. And I feel like he could be the hillbilly Martha Stewart
nice.
For the state of Tennessee. But in doing this, so we made a video 11 months ago about this. I stand by everything we've said. But I also rewatched the Steve Leto video from 7 years ago, which he's an attorney. And he said the same things that we said, and he got the same flack that we did.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We must be doing something right.
Right. But what I came up with, my moment of brilliance on this, to all the people who think like, oh, this is just, it's it's totally illegal for them to force sales tax, force you pay sales tax, you know, whatever. Property taxes might be unconstitutional. And there's a big movement in Ohio to actually abolish property taxes, also in Florida, and they may get abolished. But for the sake of argument, let's say that they are unconstitutional. If everybody agrees on that, are we going to stop paying our property taxes?
I don't think so, no. Doug. There's and pretty severe consequences.
Exactly. It's not because we agree or disagree that they're legal or illegal, or because we like giving money to the government. It's because they will take our house. So yeah, I don't like property taxes. I think they shouldn't be collected. I think they're taxation without representation. But I'm going to pay them because I don't want the government to come take our home. I don't believe it should be that way, but it is. And that's kind of how I feel about the Montana LLC thing. Like, yeah, just because I think you should tag your cars and pay sales tax on it, it's not because I believe in sales tax. It's because I don't want them putting me in jail over stupid plate on my car.
Exactly. Or taking your car.
And people cannot figure out that nuance. It's all just like, it's a loophole. It's legal. Like, you're just throwing the word loophole out like right off. You're just dropping. It's a write off. Yes. What does that even mean?
It means it's free, right, Doug?
Exactly. Oh, boy.
It's crazy. Like, is it the people that love to argue that kind of stuff? It's like, is it worth the aggravation, the time, the legal fees to prove that you were right? Do you desperately need to be that right to game the system, or just maybe don't deal with it because you have better things to do?
Oh, all the people on the internet don't actually have Montana LLCs. They're just arguing because they're like, you know, sovereign citizens came out to play. And then a few of them actually are. But I feel like the ones who actually are stay quiet about it because they don't want to brag about it.
Yeah.
So with that, I told you our warm-up lap was like a main topic. Spicy. But I don't want to make the same points we already made about that because, yeah, I'm just going to point people back to our video from a year ago because it's going to age well.
The Sheffield brand was recently revived by Jake Turkbus, an owner of an original Sheffield all-sport diver he received from his parents in 1970 when he was just 11, beginning his love of watches. As an adult, Jay used his extensive expertise in product development and marketing to revive the brand that started it all. He set out to develop watches with a high level of quality and specification at a value price. His first effort, and a successful one on July of 2023, was the debut of the Sheffield All Sport Diver 1. It had the kind of build and movement that much more expensive watches use, and his debut price of $108 was equivalent to the $13 his parents paid in 1970. Since that debut, Sheffield has expanded to a wider range of automatics and chronos, many designed around vintage Sheffield dials of the 60s. The Sheffield well of clever and unique design remains his inspiration, as well as maintaining the goal of high quality, very affordable range of automatic and quartz watches. Sheffield watches, value on merit, not just price. I love mine, so get yours at sheffieldwatches.com and be sure to mention you found them on Switchcast.
Very sad news. In the automotive world, Pitt Race, which is a fantastic track facility outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, in Beaver Falls or Big Beaver, whatever they call it.
That's a very Pennsylvania city name.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Just add Berg on the end of it. Yeah. You got Pennsylvania.
Beaverburg.
Big Beaverburg. It sold to a developer, or it is in the process of sale pending zoning approval, because we've talked with Dan from SavePitRace.org about some of the finer details of this transaction. And it is still pending through the city council. And it has not been 100% approved. And on the county website, it does not show the transaction yet. So our guess is that the funds are in escrow pending the approval of this sale. But high level overview, the owners of the facility bought it in, I believe, 2001. They've put a ton of money into it, added buildings, added a skid pad, karting track, added another mile and a half, I think, of track to it. It's become a world-class facility. I would argue it's the best facility in the Great Lakes region. Mid-Ohio has more history to it, but the facility itself is, it's aged a bit.
Could use a bit of a new coat of paint.
Yes, and then some. And I think it got a new coat of paint, but it still has pine paneling in the, you know, VIP suites. So, yeah, it's a 400-acre facility. It's not surrounded by developments for the most part, so it's not dying to noise complaints, but it's dying to AI and big corporate. So the alleged price for this track is $110 million, which is far more than it could conceivably be worth as a racetrack itself. Whoa. Because racetracks are passion projects. It's very, very difficult to make money at them, and the liability is tremendous. You put the Armco in the wrong spot and a freak accident happens, and then you get sued because the Armco was in the wrong spot. And it sounds like theory, but that has happened to tracks before. There's a lot of things frustrating about this. For the motorsports community, it is frustrating not only in the immediate sense, but also with the potential of this happening in the future. One of the points that Dan made is that racetracks are not generally popular with their neighbors. It's an environmental concern. It's a noise concern, tire disposal, fluids, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot that goes into that. And the data centers are not typically popular either. So they potentially see racetracks as an easy target of, okay, well, they already have, you know, special use zoning or conditional zoning. They're already a nuisance. So a data center won't be any more of a nuisance. It'll just be more ugly.
And, you know, make it so that the local power grid is overstressed and people have constant blackouts and brownouts. And
there you go. And that's the problem, is racetracks are generally good for their communities. They are employing local people. They are giving back to the community in the form of, you know, investment or events.
And they're bringing people to that location.
They are bringing people in. That is where revenue comes from. You ask any city council person or treasurer, and, you know, large developments don't typically bring in money. People are a drain on resources because they've got to have schools and buses and everything, and then deal with the traffic and increase their infrastructure. Large companies aren't always a benefit because they give them tax abatements. But boy, when you bring in money from outside, that's great for your community, and tracks do that. And
it is kind of amazing to me. I went to Watkins Glen this year for the first time to see the IMSA races. Fantastic track. It was so cool to see it in person after driving it constantly in video games for, like, ever since played racing sims. There is stuff around there that's just called, like, now Watkins Glen is a state park, but there's so much stuff that is themed towards the people who are passionate about some kind of motorsport coming to stay and participate and spend their money there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cool to go see the different, the different areas of the country as well. And now this is just kind of an area that's going to be another building that probably employs like five people because the whole thing is run by computers.
Yes.
Contains computers.
But it is a strain on, like you said, the local power grid.
Oh, God. You think a place where a racetrack could be is going to have great power infrastructure? Let me tell you.
Yeah. It's a strain on the local water supply. There's an engineer testifying at the city council meeting tonight as we make this recording. There's actual smart people that have done research and reports about this, And he's looking at a place in Virginia where they did a, you know, data center alley, and looking at the massive increase in power costs and water costs for residents and decrease in water pressure, where they're like, they're just taking all the resources and residents are getting priced out. So,
and this is also that when you search on Google, you get a BS AI response, or people can make photos of you looking Studio Ghibli style for some stupid reason.
And there's a great report on the Save Pitt Races website as well that's talking about why this data infrastructure is like going to be obsolete. Like it's almost making itself obsolete, because like if you think about how big computers were 50 years ago and how terrible their computing power is, and now we have everything on an iPhone. Same thing with the AI data centers. The processing is getting more efficient. It's reducing its energy consumption massively, its size. So we don't necessarily need these massive data centers. They may be actually phasing themselves out. And by the time some of these places get built, they won't even need them anymore. So on the one hand, you have they are currently a massive drain on our resources. On the other hand, you have, well, what if we give up a historical site to a massive data center? The other possible problem is, after it's done being a massive drain on resources, you don't even need it anymore, and it just has is this big eyesore, and you've lost what something you can't get back. You can't get a racetrack facility back after you've raised it and put a box there.
Well, and like so one of my favorite things about Pitt Race is the elevation change. They're probably going to level that if the building is going to go there. You can't really build on unlevel ground. So like the environment itself will be forever changed.
Here's another, this is anecdotal. So correct me if I'm wrong, but this came from my wife, whose anecdotes are typically accurate. She doesn't often need to be fact checked, but she told me that Lordstown, which is famous for the Chevy Cobalt factory and a town that relied totally on it. It's basically a trailer park and giant factory.
Yeah. And it's interesting on the interstate to drive.
It's on the interstate. It is a giant, ugly factory, and it decimated the economy when they shut it down. There's been a number of scammy EV companies to come through there. And like that economy needs quote unquote reinvigorated, that they need to do something with that building. Now, again, it's not necessarily going to employ a bunch of people, but if any place you would put a data center and it wouldn't change things very much, it would be Lordstown. And their council voted against it. Their planning commission, zoning board, whatever, voted against it. So they didn't want it there. But a place like Pitt Race, that's amazing, they're gonna let one go in there and ruin something great. It's just awful. And there's allegations that there's shadiness going on behind the scenes because of how the zoning rules are written, and it's actually not going to the zoning board because certain laws were changed in advance of this such that the city council can maintain control of this whole process, because the zoning board in Beaver Falls is apparently against this.
Okay.
But they don't have a say on it because things that were already changed a little while ago on the city council level. So there's some allegations of potential corruption there too, which wouldn't be unheard of for a city council. Can we say Twinsburg, anyone? So it's just the whole thing smells, and it really stinks. Like, listen, I get it that the owners probably want to retire and they have a big paycheck coming their way, but there's also supposedly other people who are willing to pay a bunch of money to also keep it a racetrack. Maybe they couldn't match the offer of the data center.
They probably couldn't, because there's a whole other thing with the finances of the whole AI data center industry that is like kind
Carvana.
It's like, what's the thing that eats itself? The Ouroboros or whatever? Or I don't know. There's like the dragon that's eating itself. It's like kind of, where's this money coming from? It's all hype. It's all vibes. It's all VC investment. And it's going to have to like dry up at some point.
Yeah. So anyway, so the, allegedly the sale is not complete. However, they're already listing everything there for sale via Kiko Auctions, including such things like they've got the, you know, the Ford Tauruses, or Ford Crown Victorias with the push bumpers that they use for, you know, driver training. They've got the fire trucks. They are also listing 9 miles of Armco. They're listing the urinals, the stalls in the bathrooms. I mean, they are selling absolutely everything. The owners are trying to squeeze every last cent out of this place, which to me is just a bad look. I understand, sell the signs, sell the memorabilia, sell the cars, but like, you're selling the guardrails and the urinals?
Yeah.
Really?
That feels weird.
It's weird.
Well, there's a photo of a washing machine in here. It's got a Pit Race sticker.
This isn't the first, nor will it be the last track that we lose to noise complaints, developments, etc. But I think it is a sign of impending doom when a facility this well manicured, I guess, for lack of a better term, that's nicely insulated from the suburban population and has plenty of money behind it, still sells out. And if I'm a conspiracy theorist here, which I think a lot of people are about this situation, this is like a BlackRock situation. They're going to take away all the places for us to enjoy cars off-road, and then they're going to regulate our cars out of existence on the road, which is going to be bad. But let's not camp there. Let's talk about good memories of Pit Race.
Yes.
I was fortunate enough to go to the Hooked on Driving event that took place the last weekend that they were open. It is probably the last event that ever will happen at Pit Race. And it was an adventure. It was cold. It was a little wet at the beginning. There was a lot of cars. There was like 40 cars per session. I have never seen so many cars wreck in my 20 years of tracking.
Seriously?
A Lemons race barely has more incidents.
Whoa. Was it just people like inexperienced? Was it greasy like track?
It wasn't that greasy. The first session was a little greasy and then it dried up quickly. But I left early on the first day because I had commitments. But by the time I left, I had run three sessions and at least five cars that I counted had hit the wall.
Whoa.
Maybe more, including two during my three sessions. One was a Mustang. One of them during a checkered flag lap, which is supposed to be your cool down lap.
Yeah.
And I saw many more cars off track. I saw a Miata off track on the warm up lap. I got passed by like this Audi R8 race car thing. And like a lap later, they went way off into turn one. They missed the braking zone, whatever. I was like, well, that's what you get for passing me. Nobody's faster than I am unless they're out of control. So
get that same feeling when somebody passes you on the highway and then they get pulled over a mile later. Like, yeah, serves you right.
But I realized something. Do you know what happens when you lose control of a vehicle and slide out?
What?
I fought the yaw and the yaw won.
Next.
So I don't know how many more crashes happened because the next day, the Sunday track, it was like super rainy, but like it was. Almost every session was delayed or ended early because somebody hit the wall. It was nice. I've never seen anything like it. Never seen anything like it. But the crew was great. They cleared them quickly. They got everybody back out on track. But we've had some great other memories there. I've been going there about 20 years. Tyler, have you run the track there?
I have been once.
And?
It was awesome. This was the first time that I had ever driven a Porsche. And the first time I had ever driven a GT3, well, but so it was like, gosh, 2017 or something like that. I didn't even have my 911 yet. And I did the Extreme Experience like track day thing. And I paid like $400 to drive three laps in a 991.1 GT3. And the moment of stepping out onto the track to get into a Porsche is seared into my mind as like such a like. Oh my God, I can't believe I'm doing this moment. Cause I had dreamed of doing something like that my whole life. And I'd like, thankfully I'd like played enough racing sims that I sort of knew what I was doing. And like the instructor guy, like, didn't tell me to do it. He's like, nah, just like go for it. You know what you're doing. And I felt really cool. I was like, all right. I was like, and I didn't spin.
It's really because like, if he tries to tell you anything, you're not going to listen anyway. So they've just given up.
They're like, yeah, it's fine. But I did get to like, I matted it on the straightaway on, after the last turn, which was a glorious experience for somebody who had driven a Buick, Century and a Sable wagon is my only cars at that point. So
that's awesome.
My very fond memories in my heart.
The first time I was ever there, I looked up the photos. I still have them. It was with a bunch of college students, and it was with our friend's mom's Mercury Sable.
Oh, nice.
Yes. And our other friend, Audi A4. Yeah, it was great. We have four people in the Mercury Sable doing the autocross course. And then I had my first off-track spin there, turn one, which that turn, you know, doesn't exist anymore because they have the longer track. But yeah, turn one of the shorter track, I guess the north track or whatever it's called now. Yeah, went way off, and somebody has a picture of me like full sideways, dirt flying, all that.
Really?
We can't find it, but there is a picture. And then I think that same day, a friend of mine went. And he wasn't registered for the track day, but they do the lunchtime parade laps. Okay. Where you don't have to wear helmets. Like, anybody can go out in any car, pickup truck, whatever. And it's a lead follow. There's no passing. There's no tire squealing. Like, you're going normal road speeds. And I rode with a different friend in an NSX, and I threw the keys to my buddy for the S2000. Well, he didn't know the rules, so he goes screaming by everybody down the straight. And then so we come in, and then he's still out there, and we just hear like, I'm just waiting for the
You're like, that's my car.
Never happened, but he spun out. He spun out on the parade laps.
That's amazing.
Oh, man. Yeah. I also did a pit maneuver during the Lemons race entitled Pit Maneuver.
Oh, nice. Did you do this on purpose?
No, but it was lap traffic. There was a Class C car. We were Class A. I was chasing another Class A car down. We were going through the kink, and this Class C car had been all over the place the entire race. Like, they outside, inside, just picking random places on the track, to the point where every time I got around them, I'm like, I'm scared to pass them because they're just so wild. Well, I just, you know, followed the other Class A car through the kink full speed, flying by this Class C car. They decided that they were going to take the apex, which it was technically rightfully theirs because they were ahead, but they were lap traffic. And I didn't feel like being forced off into the grass. So I just braked as hard as I could and tapped the rear quarter and just like perfect pit maneuver, put them into a spin.
Nice.
And they were in a Honda Odyssey, like the earlier one. So lower center of gravity, yeah. But I'm still watching, like, I hope they don't flip. I hope they don't flip. But I just kept driving. And then the guy came over to our pits and was like yelling at me, demanding an apology. For
that is insane.
Because
he didn't know how to drive. Well, I had somebody on a kart track do that to me, and I ended up pit maneuvering them, throwing them into the wall, and their kart hit the wall so hard it left the ground, and they skidded across the track, and he yelled at me afterwards, and I was like, I was next to him, and he cut over.
Oops. Like,
not a good time.
Well, when I went through the penalty thing, I explained to them what happened. I was just like, I didn't want to go off, so I hit them, and they literally looked at me, and they said, yeah, try to stay away from them, because they suck.
Nice.
I was like, hey, confirmation.
Let's go.
And usually Lemons people, they're always like, just admit it was your fault. Doesn't matter what you did. Just say I was wrong. And I'm like, I'm not going to say I was wrong.
Yeah.
Because my ego's too big. And I wasn't wrong. But they confirmed, yeah, you weren't wrong. Just avoid that car. And then the guy wanted to like pick a fight with me because I wouldn't apologize. And I'm like, yeah, go pound sand. I didn't say anything because I'm like, it's not going to go well. Yeah. I have a temper and I'm going to ignore you. I was like torquing the wheels or something. I just like didn't look at him. But anyway, quickly, shrewd negotiator. before, if anyone has $120 million and they want to slide in an offer real quick on pit race, so it doesn't become a data center, that'd be great. But yeah. was trying to sell a set of wheels on Facebook Marketplace this week, and I listed them. They have old tires, and I used three different words. I said they're old, they're unsafe, they're garbage, I think was the three words.
That seems pretty... Like,
you should not... These tires must be disposed of, and we can dispose of them for a fee, but, like, here's the wheels for sale that happen to have terrible tires on them. One of the first messages I get are, can you send me a picture of the tread on the tires?
No, it doesn't matter. Garbage.
No. No, I can't. Go back and read. Go back and read. I mean, I guess you could use them, like, on a track day or something like that if you have a terrible car and you're just trying to slide it around on purpose.
I guess so. Like learn how to drift or something. Yeah.
They use old tires, but... Oh, that's another thing they're selling through the Kiko auctions is old tires.
Seriously?
Yes, just stacks and stacks and stacks of them.
Like, well, I was.
You have to pay to get rid of those. You can't sell those at an auction.
There's lockers with miscellaneous contents. Like somebody couldn't even empty that. There's 20 pages of stuff here. This is kind of crazy.
It's insane. I'm going to the preview just to go. I think I don't want to buy anything on principle. I don't know. I'm going to go. I might shed a few tears, but I'm going to go. Hope to see you there. It's December 3rd, I think. Saturday, let's get this right here.
Hit two tables with chairs, no contents.
Saturday, December 6th. Yeah. Or we could all just go protest. It's not going to do anything, but yeah, we could go protest. Anyway, that is a wrap, both on this episode and maybe on Pit Race, but maybe not. Maybe there's a Hail Mary in there somewhere. Go check out savepitrace.org. Support them, support their efforts, and learn so that maybe it doesn't happen to other tracks as well.
Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy, sell, and consign only cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory online at switchcars.com and mention Switchcast for special pricing. You can find more information online at switchcars.com or come visit our showroom in beautiful Twinsburg, Ohio, where you can experience the Switch Cars difference.
Someone sent me an article this week from Autoblog about Porsche's tunnel mode. I was like, oh, this is kind of a cool feature. What? And then I started reading about it. And
before you read about what it was, what did you think it was?
I don't know. Like, it just made the exhaust louder. Like, we all want to do is.
Oh, it was like a valved exhaust. Yeah. So you don't have to hit the button. They'll like sense that you're coming up to a tunnel and open the valve.
Yeah. Or maybe it's like an extra valved exhaust. It bypasses the resonators. Like it quote unquote straight pipes it or something fun like that. Well, let's read the article from our Autoblog highlights anyway. Porsche's proposed tunnel operating mode will detect when you're approaching a tunnel in a number of ways. These include using route information from your GPS navigation system. It knows. Forward-facing cameras.
It knows.
And the vehicle's traffic sign recognition system to identify that there's a tunnel ahead. Next, the driver will receive a visual and or audible notification about 500 meters before entering the tunnel and can choose whether or not to activate the system. Oh, driver has a say in something.
Well, this can't be real.
Once they activate the system, the car automatically initiates various steps to provide an emotional acoustic experience for the occupants.
I don't like the way that sounds.
The windows are rolled down. Sport mode is activated. The transmission shifts down to a lower gear to raise revs, and exhaust valves, if any, open up. There are also provisions to raise the temperature of the air conditioning and activate the heated seats during the cold weather, ensuring occupant comfort. All the driver needs to do is to floor it.
Which is probably technically breaking the law.
The patent also includes provisions to bring these oral thrills to Porsche's battery-powered models by sending synthesized engine noise through the speaker so the EV drivers don't have to miss out on the fun.
Oh, no, they do get to miss out on the fun, and they can deal with it.
Yeah, that's the choice they made
in
buying an EV. Hold on.
We'll drive a refrigerator, you get to listen to a refrigerator.
The patent details a second tunnel operating mode designed specifically to do the opposite and suppress cabin noise.
What? Brain hurts. Dude, you know, Doug, I put my car into tunnel mode when we brought it back from Philadelphia, no less than 3 times. You know what I did? I downshifted about 2 gears, opened the windows, and floored it. It's not that hard.
So I read the article and I was like, I think I hate this
so much.
And the title of the article is Porsche's tunnel mode is proof that they understand driving joy better than anyone.
I
disagree.
The other thing, and this could be, I'm going to dog on Autoblog here for a second. I apologize. The photos of the cars that they picked to put into this article are a G-Body 911 and a 997.2 GT3. Cars that are so far away from needing or even having the technology to do this, to somehow display the, like, dedication of the Porsche brand to your experience. Give me a break.
I didn't catch that, but that's... Oh, that's a great observation.
So dumb.
Yeah. it's too much going on. It's if you have to use cameras and GPS to know that you're approaching a tunnel, to have Porsche do all this stuff for you, if they really understood driving joy, they'd just give you a manual transmission and
a
loud exhaust.
Yeah.
And a light car. Yeah, I'm about to pull up our book, Why We Drive, by Matthew Crawford. Yes, another shameless plug for this book. It's about the mechanical connection to a car and us doing things and learning skills and how that gives us pleasure and actually makes us smarter.
You have to the thing that is crazy about this is it is yet another way that somebody is using technology to take an experience away from, to not require a human to engage in the experience. You just have to sit back and enjoy.
Yeah, voice command, approve. Yes, I'm coming up to a tunnel. Please make it awesome.
Like, I don't understand. Like, wouldn't you want to do that yourself?
It's the movie WALL-E all over again.
Golly.
But, you know, the problem is if they take this all the way, they'd go, okay, well, we're going to do this, but we're also going to have integrated, we're going to know what the speed limit is because of our, you know, traffic sign recognition system. So you will not be able to exceed the speed limit when in tunnel mode. We're also going to check local noise regulations for you, and you won't be able to exceed the decibel level that is exceeding noise regulations. And then somebody's going to sue them because they get tinnitus as a result of using tunnel mode, and because Porsche did it for you, it's just take me back.
Why do we have two topics of here is technology ruining our lives? Now,
yes,
okay,
they're going to use the AI data center that's on top of Pit Race to power
to
this stupid thing that's supposed to make driving better when they took a dang racetrack away from us.
This just feels like a software developer solution to a problem that doesn't exist. And this is something that I've noticed, and I've got friends that are software developers. I am / used to be one. I pay attention to some stuff.
Used to be one.
I work in Excel and PowerPoint and Word now. And I ask other people to do things and then follow up when they're not done. And then we're behind schedule and doesn't matter. I entirely lost my train of thought.
That's okay. Software developers doing things.
Yes. So software developers love to find a problem that doesn't exist. So they have a reason to develop something that fixes that problem. And it feels like somebody within Porsche was like, I'm passionate about driving, but a software developer. Let me find out how I can merge these two passions together to create a thing that people are going to love. Hate it.
Yeah. So let's talk about some other great features that may or may not be solving problems that do or do not exist. One of them, speaking of Pit Race, I encountered this past week, and this is not a particularly new feature, but it is stability management. I like stability management. I do not like that after 2010 or so, in most vehicles, you cannot shut it off entirely. It says it's off, but it still engages. Now, I'm going to say why this is a real problem. Now, you can say, well, this is only on the racetrack. It shouldn't be a real problem otherwise. But regardless, it's a problem. I had a 997.2 911. I turned PSM off, which is Porsche's stability management. It would still flash at me out of some of the corners because it was kicking in. It didn't like what I was doing. The yaw sensor said, oh, well, you got too much yaw going on. And
but you turned it off.
And I was under throttle and it was pulsing the rear brakes.
Oh.
So it overheated the rear brakes so much that one lap before the end of the session, I lost my brakes. Like I could not stop. I had to downshift, like barely made a corner. And I did a whole lap of like hardly using the brakes thinking, okay, I'll just do like a cool down lap. Still nothing.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did you just let the car sit for a while? Or
yeah,
how did...
had to let it sit for a while.
Oh, man.
And I finally had to figure out a way around it to basically like artificially straighten the car in the middle of a corner to trick the car into not thinking I'm sliding anymore. And yeah, it was.
That sounds dangerous.
It is. It's more dangerous than the PSM itself. Yeah. So I know that they're all about liability, but just like let us have to like sign something before we turn it off or whatever. Like, yes, I accept the risk. Okay. Turn it off all the way. Or I don't know. Let me do it.
Ugh. I also get annoyed. This is way less intense, but this is like, have you ever noticed, Doug, when you're driving through a parking lot, especially at night, and GM vehicles have their reverse lights on and they're not moving?
I haven't noticed that.
So
I don't notice GM vehicles.
Well, they all just kind of look like amorphous blobs. For some reason, I believe it's GM. I guess I hope I'm not wrong. Otherwise, the comments will eviscerate me. They like to, when you are, it's like the when the parking lights are on, their reverse lights are also on. So you think somebody could be backing up into traffic as you're going through the parking lot or like backing up into you or whatever when all they're doing is locking or unlocking their car.
Hmm.
And they stay like that until the headlights go off. It is insane because that like indicates an action. And I think the reverse light that is indicates that the operator of the vehicle is taking an action usually. And I'm assuming that some of this was a like helps you find your car or makes people more aware of their surroundings because they think something's going to happen. I just think this is a really stupid idea. And I don't think it actually satisfies its intended consequence or its intended outcome.
Here's one along the line of Porsche's tunnel mode. There is a video sent to me by Pete Jackson of a synthetic exhaust device that you can put on your car. Could be an EV, could be anything, but it's a fake exhaust sound. But the sound itself is about the quality of like a 2000s video game. I think this was from nice. SEMA. You literally can't tell the difference. He's like, you can do a pickup truck and you can do a Ferrari, and he changes it. And I'm like, they sound the same. But what people don't know, well, they do know, Porsche's doing this. But even internal combustion manufacturers have been doing this for years.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah.
It's there already. You just don't know that it's there.
There are a lot of
sound is synthetic.
And it's so dumb. If I ever bought a car that had a speaker inside playing, I'd pull the fuse, I'd unplug it, I'd do whatever I needed to do. Because even if it doesn't sound that good, I just want the way the car sounds. That is what is more important to me. Because yeah. I'm not, who am I posturing for? Myself?
Now, you mentioned dumb. One that's pretty crazy with the Ioniq or whatever. You can't change the brakes?
Yes, and we're going to come back to that later.
Okay, fine.
There is a thing that involves needing access to the computer system in the car, which you need a certification and like an account that involves the federal government somehow to prove that you should have access to this information. You need all this stuff just to be able to undo or like release the electronic parking brake so you can change your brakes.
That's insane.
Insanity.
That's insane.
And it's like on the surface, I don't, because cars have so much data in them now and capture and store and calculate whatever, I don't want Joe Schmo having access to that, but also I should be able to change my own brakes without having the certification, paying thousands of dollars for this tool. It's so dumb.
How about automatic emergency braking? How do you feel about that one?
I think it has its uses for people that don't pay as much attention as they should. Yes, like... If somebody's behind me texting, I hope they have automatic emergency braking. For that me, is, I don't really think I need it. But
that is how I feel about it, too. I want it for everyone else. I just don't want it on my car.
Yeah. And, you know, lane keep assist, I think, again, for the texting could be useful. But I have noticed something driving my fiance's car. If I don't put on my turn signal when I'm merging onto a highway, the dashed strip as the on-ramp ends will trigger it and it will jerk the wheel back to the right. And now some could argue maybe I should put on my turn signal, but who am I signaling to? The people on the on-ramp behind me? The people on the highway know that I'm merging onto the highway. Like, maybe I'm just more focused
on turning right.
Yeah, and like maybe I'm just more focused on trying to successfully merge into traffic than like keep my blinker on.
To that end, I don't like lane keep assist. I do like blind spot assistance. I think that is nice. A very good feature. Even though I check my mirrors and have my mirrors set right, they say, oh, if you have them adjusted properly, you don't have a blind spot. Not true if you have ever driven a Lamborghini Diablo. I like that feature as a backup.
Yes.
As an extra, like, oh, crap, I really didn't see them.
Well, and I just had that trigger for me driving a few days ago when I was on the highway. I was like, I'm going to make a move. And I looked like over to my, I was checking around me and I hadn't looked to the right yet, which is the direction I was going. So I wanted to like get my bearings before I moved. And I ticked on the turn signal before I had was like about to look, and it already had like bonged that like, hey, somebody's here that I hadn't seen yet. And I wasn't moving yet, but it was nice to just have that reminder. So just in case I start listing over or like whatever, like somebody's there. I was okay with that.
I do like that. Yep. I also like rain sensing wipers. That's a great technology.
Yes, those are good.
Yep. Yeah.
Those are good. Excellent. I like really basic stuff. Anti-lock brakes, solid. Stability control, when it will actually listen to you, also solid. Heated steering wheels, great.
Wait, did you just say stability control is solid tech?
When it listens to you, when you can turn it off. When you can, like, when it responds to your desires. Like, if you want it on, it's a good technology, I think, to keep people kind of, like, you know, on the straight and narrow. But if you try to turn it off, then it becomes bad technology.
That's another one of those technologies I like for everyone else. I don't need it.
Doug's like,
I'm a superior driver. I don't need that type of thing. But you know what new technology I do like?
What's that?
Rain sensing wipers.
Oh, you know, Doug. Well, I'm pretty sure that those came out before Ethan did, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. Right.
Totally forgot about that. That's all right.
That was the only scripted part of our show. And
I don't. We're not used to it.
Anyway. On to Plate to Sample, our ever-popular game where we name off the... No, we read a vanity plate, and the other person has to guess the stereotype by saying, what car is it on? I got a plethora of submissions this week. Yes, thank you all for your submissions. They won't all make it on, but please keep sending them. This game is brought to us both in concept and... financially by Solon Spine. If you are crooked, they'll set you straight.
Ooh, I like that. That was slick.
Yeah. Literally. And I was thinking this week of an analogy of like, why is it good to, you know, consult a person like Dr. Hoover that can fix your, you know, body. And it's like, you know, cause he's all about not having surgery. Invasive surgery, specifically spinal surgery, if you don't need it. And I was thinking about like single stage paint cars. So many people have come to me with older Porsches and that paint is all faded. And they're like, oh, I was going to get it repainted. I'm like, no, don't. Well, it's all faded. It's like orange. I'm like, yeah. And you just like polish a little part of it and you show them. It's like the original paint's still there. You can just polish the car and bring it back. And then you still have the original paint. You're not like, so car's only original once, your body's only original once. Your body is actually made to heal itself. Like the, you know, blood gets in there and does things and what, I don't know, as medical stuff, but
science,
it's worth getting a second opinion before you repaint your car or have major surgery. So go see Dr. Hoover at Solon Spine. Okay, Tyler, what is your first plate?
All right, for you, Doug, RAV8.
Okay, it's a Toyota.
Sort of.
But with a V8. Wait, no, it could be RAV8.
Yeah, it's RAV space 8.
Oh, RAV8.
RAV8.
It's a V8 Toyota. It's like a RAV4. Is it a Sequoia? So I
like where they went with this, and I was curious if you were going to get it. It's essentially the Lexus version of the RAV4.
Does it so have it's like a
better. V8? No, no, it's just like better, more different or whatever. So instead of a RAV4, it's the, like the next level up, which would be RAV8. I don't know. I thought it was creative.
Would be like 5. The next level after 4 is 5.
I guess that's true. But yeah, it's like, what is this? A something X350H, like whatever terrible model name number they have. Yeah,
they tried.
All right, I tried. Sorry.
No, you didn't try. They tried. That's not your plate. Okay, here's one for you from Brian Ketchum on Instagram. Boy Racer.
Oh, this is a WRX.
No.
A Camaro.
No.
An Audi.
No.
Oh, boo. Okay. What?
Keep wait, them
what
coming. No.
I didn't even say anything.
It's
yet.
A Tesla.
Gross.
Like Model 3 or whatever. The low end one.
They should apologize for that plate.
I knew you wouldn't like that one. Ugh. I knew Alrighty. You wouldn't get it either.
Next up for you, Doug. Sweet and low.
A Volvo.
No.
Saab.
Yes. And it looks a little lower.
9.3 Viggen?
No, it's just, like, it's some convertible 9000, I think is what it is. Something from the 90s. But it's that's a great plate.
I love that plate. Okay, here's an easy one for you from Justin on Instagram. 9H2O.
It's an air-cooled port. 964, 993, G-body, some kind of air-cooled 911.
G-body 911.
Nice.
Figured you needed a layup.
Oh, no, those are my boys. Next up for you, Sigma Boy. S-G-M-A-B-O-Y. Sigma Boy.
I mean, there's like Sig Sigma. There's Sigma, like a Greek letter. Does he belong to a fraternity? Is it BMW M...
new
package like M Sport package?
That's a good guess though.
Three
this
series
is worse. This is worse. It's a Tesla Model Y.
Oh
yeah,
okay,
it's pretty gross.
All right, here's one for you. Idaho plate from Sean on Instagram. Yay.
Huh,
do you need the number of A's?
I do, I do.
I think there's 5, but my eyes are playing tricks on me.
Is that a something cheerful and fun, maybe?
I guess so.
Could be a Miata.
Nope.
It could be a Toyota Supra.
Nope. One.
I guess the same things all the time, so I'm trying to expand my horizons. You have no idea. What is it?
Ferrari looks like a GTC4 Lusso.
Okay.
FF, right. Basically.
Yeah. I get it.
Yep.
For you, Doug, Iacocca.
Dodge Viper.
No.
Gen 1.
It is not.
Early 90s Chrysler.
Yes. I think this is early 90s or late 80s. It's a LeBaron.
Ooh.
And it's a pace car.
That's good.
It is an Indy 500 pace car LeBaron.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. All right. Michigan plate, this one from David on Instagram, was his, with Z's, was
oh,
his.
Is this like an Escalade?
Nope. Well, good guess.
Close. Okay. Is it like a Corvette?
Nope. Cadillac CT4V.
Okay.
CTS4, whatever they call it. Anyway.
Okay.
But I ran the plate and apparently they've traded it in because it's now a 2013 Mustang Shelby GT500.
Whoa. Okay. Big power.
Yeah. Big
Not
power.
Enough brake.
Big power. Yeah. So I don't know if they got it in the divorce or she just requisitioned it from the his and hers side of the garage and said that, nope, I get both sides or something.
Where was that plate from?
Michigan.
Oh, interesting. I have an Ontario plate here for you that is was hers. With a Z.
Cadillac CT4?
No, it is not. This is actually no relation to the car. It's a C4 Corvette, of all things.
All right.
So,
okay. All right. Last one for you, I think. Vanity of Maine, one of my favorite pages.
Oh, such a good page.
Real Man is the plate.
Oh, this is a Volkswagen Bug or Kia Soul.
No.
Or a Nissan Cube.
No.
Smart car.
No. A real man and the plates in Maine. Come on. It is a Ram 1500 truck. But the great part of it is it is upside down in a riverbed. That's nice. Where the photo was taken.
Real man. Love it.
Real men don't know how to drive their pickup trucks. Real men perfect. Meet the stereotypes of owning a Ram. Which is, they have, I don't know if you know this, they have like the highest rate of DUIs and the highest accident rate.
Oh, seriously?
Everything. Oh, yeah.
That's amazing.
It's a bad stereotype.
Judging by how they all drive on the road, I can understand.
It's the Nissan Altima of trucks. Thank you for joining us for Switchcast with Doug Tabbitt and Tyler Sanders, produced by Ethan Huffnagel. Switchcast is an automotive entertainment and opinion show, and nothing we say should be taken very seriously. We do not give tax, investment, legal, emotional, or professional advice, and the only licenses we hold are driver's licenses. The opinions expressed on this show are exclusively held by the people pontificating at that moment and do not reflect the values of our producers or sponsors. Our theme music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. If you like this show, you can stream it in its entirety on your favorite audio podcast platform. Check out switchcast.live for more info.